Hello, this is Tamiko Faison, your host for Therapy Entrepreneurs and Leaders of Color, a podcast dedicated to therapy entrepreneurs and leaders of color around the world who are leading in their space. I am so super excited today with our guest, Linda Hurst. Linda Hurst is a gem. She has an undergraduate degree in social work from Temple University, and she went on then to go into the military reserves in 1982. In 1982, she, however, was not able to work as a social worker in the reserves because at the time they did not hire social workers in the military. And that's when she found out about occupational therapy and was trained to be an occupational therapy assistant. After she left the military, she went on to become the very first Black OT graduate from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And she was said she was a non-traditional student in many ways, which she'll tell about and as she talks about her journey in a few minutes. And she worked in mental health during her professional career, and she's also going to share about that. Welcome, welcome, Linda.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing well. I'm thrilled because I said to you before we started that I kind of felt like maybe I was a stalker because once I found out from your daughter. So how I know Linda is that I am a consultant for a behavioral health company, and I was collaborating with one of the psychiatrists, and as she was talking, I said, "Oh wow, she seems to know a lot about OT, more so than most psychiatrists that I collaborate with." And then she told me, she said, "Oh, it's because my mom is an OT." And then she said, "And my mom was the first Black OT graduate from UNC Chapel Hill and from their OT program." And I, ever since she told me that, I have been trying to reach Linda, and I'm so glad we connected, and I'm just thrilled. It's Black History Month, and I'm like, what? I just can't think of a better way to end Black History Month, which I say Black History is 365. So we do this podcast all year round, but we definitely highlight this month as well. And I just can't think of a better way to end, a better note to end on than to interview the very first Black OT graduate. I also share with Linda that I was in the OT program in 1999 at UNC, and I went to the director and asked her to connect me with the alumni who were Black. And I asked, like, can you send me a list of all the Black OTs who graduated before me? And she said, oh, I can just tell you who they are. And it was four. And so I believe the program began in the 70s. I came in 1999. And at the time, as a first-year student, there had only been four Black OT graduates. And so there has been many since then, but at the time there were only four, and Linda was one of them, the trailblazer, the first. So Linda, if you can tell the story of how you got into OT.
It was by chance. I wanted to get a profession that was close to my undergraduate degree in social work. And when I went into the reserves, I had the opportunity to choose my job for the military. So as I researched closely with the recruiter, I found occupational therapy. I said, this sounds like social work. So I was excited. I was like, oh, okay, this is something I can do. I can make a difference and be in the healthcare profession. So I said, oh, this is good. And the military offered a special nugget where I could actually sit for the occupational therapy assistant exam and practice because of my bachelor's degree. So that's how I learned about OT. That's how I got into OT through the military. And the course was really good. I think you can get college credits for those that didn't have a degree. So they offered a pretty good program through the military. So that's how I wound up getting into this wonderful profession.
And so you go on, you know, you leave the military and you decide you want to become an OT versus an OT assistant. You like the program, but you decided you wanted to advance your education and you choose UNC Chapel Hill. Can you talk about what it was like being a Black OT during the time when there weren't really a lot of Black OTs at UNC, as well as just in the profession in general?
I was working as a CODA at this mental health facility, a private mental health facility. And I just really loved what I was doing. And because of the limitation of being able to work as a CODA, I couldn't without an OTR. So I said, well, you know what? I need to go back to school so I can have that security and that independence to be able to do more in our profession. So I applied. I had to take a couple of extra courses, of course, to get into the program, which worked for me. I was a CODA, had my undergraduate degree in one of the sciences, have worked in the profession for a couple of years in mental health. So I was set. I applied, and the one good thing about it, the psychiatrist, the director at the facility I work for, wrote a really good reference. And my supervisor at the time, she said, my goodness, he wrote a really nice reference for you. But that's because I work closely with him to get his patients where they need to be, to see that, yes, you can change as a human being. You can change. You can learn coping skills and move forward in your life. So he wrote a really good recommendation. I think that helped as well. And that's how I got accepted into the UNC Chapel Hill program. Of course, I was not the first Black female, because she was a female. She had got accepted in the program at UNC Chapel Hill. She was younger than I was, and she was from Georgia. But because of some of the racial things that were going on, she dropped out of the program, sadly. So with that, it made me more, driven to complete the program, regardless of what challenges, because I had some challenges prior to getting into the program. If I can speak honestly, I interviewed with 5 different people, whereas all the other students interviewed once. One of my friends in the program, she was from Washington, Portland. She interviewed by phone. So it kind of upset me a little bit that I had to go through that. And then I also had to tell one of the interviewers that I'm not asking for a handout because I will be paying for my education. I just want a chance to get into the program, because she went through, well, you graduated from an urban school, which is not good. This is a competitive program. And I had to go through all that. Like I told her, I didn't ask her for a handout. I will be paying. If I don't succeed, it won't be because of you all. I mean, like I said, I'm not asking for no favors. I'm not asking for a handout. I just want an opportunity to get into the program. And it's up to me to graduate. So I had to really stress that. Then once I had to go up there and talk to a Black professor. I mean, it's just trials and tribulations. You got to jump through the hoops, and I know that, and that's okay. I've been doing that. You probably know that as well. As you go through this journey, there are hoops, and sometimes there are mountains. So you learn, you know, by my faith, I either go through it, go around it, go above it, go underneath. Whatever way I need to get through it, I will. So that's how I got into the program, and it was difficult from the start, but it didn't stop me because I love the profession. I love what I was doing as a CODA. And I said, well, this will give me the opportunity to do even more and to be an example and to help other students that were thinking about the program. It's challenging. Anything worth having is challenging. So can't be afraid of the challenge. Just put your best foot forward.
Very true. I can relate to so much what you said. Yes, I do understand that we will have challenges. And sometimes when you tell stories, people who haven't experienced it are in shock. And you're like, this is my life. You know, it's not a bandwagon thing. This is my daily life. Not to say that I get used to it, but I know that this is what it is.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm curious, when you said you had to go meet with a Black professor, was that a professor? I'm assuming it wasn't a professor in OT. Did they just feel like you needed to connect with someone Black before you actually entered the program?
He was associated with the OT program to some degree. I forget. Forgive me, my memory.
It wasn't Dr. Thorpe, was it? Dr. Robert Thorpe?
Yes.
Was it? Yeah. Oh, I'm going to scream, because he was my mentor when I got out of the OT program. And I know he had helped the OT program. He was actually faculty in the X-ray program. but he helped the OT program. Like, I think he stepped in and taught and even financially was helping it at some point. He had shared with me. This is just amazing.
It is. It's a small world, be honest with you. But that was him. Yeah, that was him. He was really good. He's also the one that was openly candid about the student, the first student.
Okay.
But like I told him, I've traveled a little bit. I'm not easily discouraged. I don't care what they bring.
Bring it on.
Bring it on. I'm going to get through it.
I love it.
I mean, this, like you said, is our livelihood. Mm-hmm. I had a family at the time. I'm not playing. I like my profession when I was serving, you know, as a CODA. So I know this is something that I want to do. I'm putting time, effort, and money into this. So I'm going to do the best that I can. And once I got admitted to the program, but like I said, let me get back to him. Dr. Thorpe was very kind. He asked some questions, gave some answers, and, you know, talked about the challenges with the program. And I said, I'm up for the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
I'm up for the challenge. I said, you know, I will do what I can do. I can only put my best foot forward. I can't make excuses or remarks or comments about anybody else. The professors in the program, the other students, I don't have anything to do with that. All I can speak for is myself.
Yeah.
And I'm here.
Yeah. And I just hear it through, you know, your responses that you love the profession. And I can also relate to that. I remember my husband asking me one day when he came to the OT department I was also working at a mental health facility and there were no other Black OTs. And he said, how is it that you're in this profession? He said, I don't know. I don't really like the word fit, but that's what the word he used. He said, I don't know. Do you fit with the other people? Because he was coming every day because I had a son who was preemie. So he was picking up meals and he was interacting with everyone. And he said, oh, you're so different from everyone there. How are you functioning in it? And it was like, I love the profession. Culturally, it is very different for me. I feel like I live in, and still do sometimes, two completely different worlds from a cultural standpoint. But the profession,
yes.
I love it.
Yes.
It's like it's not even...
That's the common denominator.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It is. It comes from our backgrounds. I mean, the basics of our profession to keep man and people active and doing what they do, their activities of daily living. If you can't do those, you can't do anything else.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there are different ways that you can achieve your goal. And that's something that we teach people. Because you had a stroke don't mean life stops.
Yeah.
So let's explore your options of how to get from point A to point B and get to the end of this journey here. So I love it. I mean, and I believe that people can change. I don't care what your status is, what your diagnosis is. If something in you, we can pull out to show that you can change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we have to keep that hope alive, so to speak, the corner.
Yeah, we do. We do. We keep it alive for our clients. And then it sounds like also we keep it alive for ourselves as Black OTs in the profession.
Yes.
So my next question is, what does Black History Month mean to you? I'm going to have to, if you are okay with it before this is over, take a screenshot because you came on with these faith-based quotes. And then I'm looking at John Lewis behind you. I love John Lewis. I mean, amazing person. What does Black History mean to you?
Celebrating all of us that contribute to this world, this society. More importantly, that we are contributors to this world.
Mm-hmm.
And we should be recognized for that. It's so easy to have the stereotypes, and I'm here to say that I'm not a stereotype. we contribute, we work hard, we get down in the dirt and plow through it as well. And we need to celebrate those that have come before us and have paid dearly with blood.
Yes.
I mean, they have paid dearly I celebrate who we are as a people. And there's nothing like recognizing those that are doing, that paid the price. And I can't fathom the price that was paid. I mean, we read the words, we hear the words, but to actually go through it, and the things that I've gone through in my lifetime as being a Black woman, can't compare through some of the things that others have gone through. So we need to celebrate who we are. We are wonderful people.
We are powerful. We powerful, are wonderful, people. Resilient.
Yeah, very resilient. No matter what we go through, it doesn't deter us to get to that goal that we have set. So I love, but I'm a 365 person too, to celebrate who we are, mm-hmm. and what we contribute to this country that we're in. So it's not about, I'm thankful for the month I am, mm-hmm. because it gives, especially our children, a chance to recognize those that are blazing the trails now and in the past, and those that are working towards the future, because it's ever evolving, it's ever changing. Just like us as human beings, we're ever changing. It doesn't get, we don't get stuck in one rut. We still come out of it. And I do, I'm a faith person. I couldn't have made it thus far without the Lord, because it was times in the program, I remember with neuroanatomy, which is a difficult course. I went in the bathroom and I said a prayer. I said, Lord, I've done all my studying that I could do. Now I need you to take the pen and help me. I remember it because it was a little painful with this test. I came out, took the test, and five people had failed. And one of my friends, she in the program, she said, well, I guess we'll be staying. But she had failed the neuroanatomy test. I said, well, I won't be staying.
He said, don't speak that over me.
Please don't speak that over me. I said, I didn't fail. I put my trust in the Lord, and, you know, in faith, you do what you're supposed to do. You'll do the rest. Mm-hmm. And I should have asked for an H, A, but I just asked to pass. And you got to know what you're asking of the Lord. You got to be very specific. I learned that too. And I passed, so I didn't have to stay. And she was like, you don't have to stay. I said, no, I didn't fail. I passed that. I passed that test.
You spoke that. Yes, I resonate with all of that. I do the same thing. I tell my kids, I'm like, there's death and life in the power of the tongue.
Yes.
So be careful what you're saying, and also be careful with who you're around and what they're saying, because sometimes that rubs off, and you have to be strong enough to say, like, don't put what you're saying on me. This is, mm-hmm. your story is not my story.
Exactly. And I would never wish, and that's the difference between me and some other professionals, is I don't wish harm. I wasn't taught that. I don't wish harm for anybody else. I don't wish for nobody else to fail. I don't have that. I don't put that expectation on them. I'm thinking about myself. I want all of us to pass. I want all of us to do well. Want all of us to energize each other and work together. But it's coming. It's a slow process with this world that we're in now, with the people, but don't put that on me. I didn't fail. I'm leaving. I'll see you later.
I love it.
But I realize the environment I'm in. I know that people are watching. There were a lot of things. My husband was always saying, I don't want to see you on TV protesting with a red scarf on your head. He's from the island, so he's okay. Like, please don't let me see you on there. And that was another trying thing, because I tried commuting back and forth from Fayetteville to Chapel Hill, but that didn't work too good. So I wound up staying on somebody's couch the first year. Just so I would be up there, and I'd come home on the weekend to be with my family. So it was difficult. It was difficult.
Wow. Yeah, and you made it. And I guess you need to be recognized. you need to be recognized for being the first. We still have lots of firsts going on in our world, but the first Black OT to graduate from UNC Chapel Hill. And I know you're just giving us bits and pieces of the story. I can't probably even imagine the challenges that you dealt with. On top, you know, you were married, you had a family, so you were sleeping on the couch. They were not, you know, maybe not expecting you to do well, which is why I guess you met with Dr. Thorpe, and they already had another person who, because of the racial issues, decided I can't do it.
There were prevalent issues within that department. Kathy Nielsen was my advisor, and she was wonderful.
Wonderful. I know she was my program director when I was in the program. Shout out to Kathy Nielsen.
Yeah, shout out to her. I love her. She understood.
She did.
As much as one can understand the plight that you're taking on. She was really, really good.
She was an ally.
Yes, she was. Yeah. Very much so.
Yeah. She was the person that I asked about who are the Black OTs who graduated from the program. And she said, I name them. And she named out the four. But we had lots of conversations about race, because in OT, since you focus on what you do, there are cultural differences that were concerning to me about how we talked about what people do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there wasn't, so we had conversations about that, and she, very candid conversations, and I actually went to had dinner with her one night at her house, and she said, we need Black faculty. And, you know, she hired me 3 years after I graduated. Now, at the time, I didn't have confidence in myself as a newer graduate to be an educator, but she hired me. So I know that she wasn't just about the talk. She was also about putting action behind what she was doing. Yes, and like you said, as much as one can understand, no one will ever fully understand who has not experienced racism and discrimination. But there are definitely people who walk alongside you, and you know from what they say and also what they do. If they're
she's one of them.
She is one of them.
Dr. Thorpe, my conversation with him was very comforting. I mean, he put it out on the table. I appreciate the honesty. So if I had to go and talk to someone, he was there. But to be honest with you, it was just so hectic, you know, the course material and trying to go back and forth home and be there for my children so they could see me. Mm-hmm. It was hard. It was hard. Yeah. And Jackie actually, I brought her back with me to live and go to school there the last year.
Okay.
She loved it. She really enjoyed that. So it was quite a journey. I'm not so sure she likes that word too much, journey.
She's amazing, by the way. Dr. J is amazing. She's not working with in the setting that I'm still collaborating with. Mm-hmm. The interactions that I had with her, I was like, wow, why can't all psychiatrists be like Dr. J? But they don't all have.
They have to have us around and listen to us.
Yeah. They don't all have Linda Hurst as their mom. So
yeah,
that's the difference with Dr. J. What advice do you have for other OTs, for Black OTs, OTs of color, OTs who may, you know, experience oppression, racism, or discrimination now, what advice would you give to them?
Stay true to yourself. Don't doubt who you are, because I heard that in what you said, and I had that as well. And you will go through that, but when you're thinking that or walking through it, say, no, I am who I am, and I can do this. And you pull out all the stoppers, and you move forward. Don't give up, because the profession really is a wonderful profession to be in.
It is.
I mean, you just have so many different ways you can go, so many different age groups that you can work with. I mean, I love it. It's never, to be honest with you, it's never a dull moment in OT. And I like that. It's always exciting, meeting people, looking at them meet their goals and change their life around. I saw that. And so many times, I think that's what got the director of the program that I work with, the doctor that I work with in mental health. He saw that. And he was willing, because I had a patient that needed to confront her father and taught her how to be assertive, encouraged her, supported her. And I talked to the doctor and said, she needs to confront you, because she saw him as a father figure. So he said, that'll be good. And she did that. And it was a breakthrough. And so that's why he wrote such a good recommendation, because he actually saw the coping skills that were taught to her work.
Wow. So that's a powerful example, because that's an example for like the evidence of the efficacy of OT in mental health, which that's a whole nother, like we'll have to have you back, Linda, on another podcast to talk about OT in mental health. And that's where our roots were, and we've gotten away from that.
Yes, I agree.
To get back to it, but
I agree. But that's the whole premise. And when you see someone change and have that gleam of hope that life could be better, I mean, it's nothing more satisfying. And it just reinforces that man is ever changing and evolving.
Yeah,
and if they put the work in it, they change. We change. We grow. We develop. We get out of that rut that we're in. It's a holistic approach, which, you know, our profession promotes holistic. And when you're using all the things that we learned in OT school, all those different techniques, coping mechanisms, I mean, you just add to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were surprised in mental health, which is something new I got to teach a little bit. When you have a patient that comes in with a prior stroke and they have some adaptive needs that need to be met. When I told them, oh no, I can help with that. We need to look at that. I need to go over and teach. I need to check to see if they're doing their exercises, cognition. I work well with all the other disciplines, with speech therapy, physical therapy. Sometimes a little battle with the physical therapist, you know. Okay. You overstepping your bounds here. Let's work. Let's pull back together, because we won't duplicate services. So let's be clear on what we're doing. So we benefit the patient. We make sure they get everything they need, because it's enough work in your profession, in my profession, and let's come together and collaborate and make sure that we present a best program for this patient. So I'm an advocate for teaching other professions who we are. What we do.
Yeah.
That's also receptive to hear them too, as well. Mm-hmm. So it's really good, because they're surprised that you can do that. I'm like, yes, I can do that.
definitely a need for that. What hospital, I'm curious, that you worked in mental health after you, when you started your career in OT?
I actually went back to the same facility in Fayetteville. It was Cumberland Hospital.
Okay. Yeah, I'm curious. I wonder if they still have, because there's so many places. I meet OTs who said that they work in, that there were so many OT mental health positions years ago, and then in those settings now, they don't exist.
They were actually bought up by Cape Fear.
Okay.
Yeah, so the OTs, all the staff was that they kept now work under Cape Fear.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, Linda, if you have time in your schedule to come back to talk more about mental health, I would love it. For today, this has been amazing. I love the we kind of went on a tangent a little bit after you gave your advice. So I want to circle back to that, where you said, don't give up. And we talked about how both you and I have had that, where sometimes you start doubting yourself because we've got all this other information telling us who we are.
Yes. Right?
You know, you're not really, you don't really fit, and all these other things that we have to filter out. And I really would love for us to just get rid of the whole imposter syndrome that we're not supposed to be there. Wherever God has placed us, wherever we are at, we have what it takes to do whatever the assignment is.
Yes.
And I didn't know that when I was hired by Kathy in 2000 and I think it was 2004, but I know it now. It's, like you said, it's a journey.
Yes.
It's a journey, and it, you know, you have to continue to remind yourself, and whatever it takes to remind yourself, just don't give up
on
whatever it is that you're called to do in the assignments that you are called to work in.
Yes, he ordered your steps and he used anyone. And that's why, I mean, it's just amazing. You had the same people in your corner that I had.
Yes. Kathy,
you know, oh my gosh, a real good shout out to her. I love Kathy.
Yeah, I'm going to have to send this link to her.
She was awesome. Awesome,
amazing.
Awesome.
Amazing person. And then Dr. Thorpe. I lived in that man's office, just like knock, knock, knock. Dr. Thorpe, I got another thing I need to either vent about, cry about, share. And he was one that's like, you're not going to give up. And he would tell me stories. Like you said, you know, the people that came before us, oh my goodness, we can't even imagine what they went through. But he would tell me, like, I would tell him a story saying, this happened and I'm mad about it. And he would say, oh, and he would give me a story of something that happened to him. And it was so much worse, in my opinion, what he had to deal with when he came to UNC, what he was called in front of people and how people didn't necessarily advocate. And he would tell me these stories and I would just marvel at how calm, articulate, and...
Yes. That's him. That's him. When you, I didn't remember, but when you said his name, I saw a picture flash before me, and that was him. Because I really only met with him once.
Okay.
I had the opportunity to talk with him, and that was a very pleasant interview. I mean, even though we faced some hard facts, it still was a good talk to know that, He looks like we're alike, and that, you know, the support is there, but I have so much going. I just have to correct one thing. I stayed in the military, and through all that I went through, I took a job at Fort Bragg.
Okay.
And during the war, I set up the Warrior Transition Program.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And so that foundation was laid, and they really relied. I mean, OT was a vital part of the team, because we set up exercises, ADLs. I mean, we were really, and Bragg was number one because, see, Bragg is top-notch military. Fort Bragg, they lead the way. And at the meetings with all the OTs and with the Warrior Transition Command in D.C., we would have conferences. And I remember what my commander, they were talking about, did everybody get off, did all the OTs get the goals in for the soldiers? And my commander looked back, and the command sergeant major, they both looked back at me and said, do we have the soldiers' goals in the system? And I'm like, mm-hmm. And then every time they would ask, do you have this stuff? They would look back. I'm like, yes. Because we bring people together, believe it or not. We bring people together. We bring the team together, and we work together, and... So it got really hard. One OT, two CODAs at that time, we were rapidly approaching 1,000 soldiers.
Oh,
and wow. I was like, how are we going to do this? But that's
what you
work together with all the other disciplines, and you come up. I think I represented our profession in that scenario. We were educating people to what we can do. And it's not about just OT, it's all the other components, all the other disciplines working together.
Yes.
With that patient, that soldier right there in the center. And we're all bringing information for that soldier. Work with the TBI, the traumatic brain group, and which is That was real challenging. It kind of took me out the box a little bit. Mm-hmm. I love it.
I can hear it in your voice that you love the profession. Thank you so much, Linda, for being the first Black OT graduate at UNC Chapel Hill, for being a trailblazer, for being positive, for starting a program for soldiers, for being a veteran and serving our country. I could just go on and on and on. I am just grateful for you, and you have made a difference in our profession. You've made a difference in, I think, the listeners, whoever's listening to this, if this didn't make a difference, I don't know. Maybe you don't have a heartbeat. I don't think anyone could listen to this and not know that you have made significant contributions to our profession, and you deserve to be recognized. This is just the first. This is just the first time that we're going to recognize through the podcast, but it's not the last. We'll continue to honor and recognize you for all that you've done for the profession. Thank you again for being here. You're very welcome. And that is our you're welcome.
Thank you for bringing up some pleasant memories with Dr. Thorpe and Dr. Nielsen. I mean, nice, pleasant thoughts.
I'm so glad that we had a balance, because we have to do that too, right? That sometimes we start talking about some of the hard stuff and it can get real heavy. We have to remember there's always light. Like Amanda Gorman says, we only can see it and brave enough to be it. There's always some light. And those two people are definitely light.
Thank you.
Thank you all for listening. Don't forget to follow. Until next time, that's our show.